for the fans, by the fans. This is the Non-League Football Show. Welcome to the greatest, the most fantastic audio hour every week about life below the Football League. I am, of course, Tim Fuel, and I'm pleased to welcome into the studio with me this very fine February morning, not one, but two legends of the Non-League game. Back with me, as per usual, the manager's manager, Mr. Dave Anderson.
Good morning.
It's a good morning. The rain seems to have been holding off at the moment. We'll discuss the weather.
I have to tell you, though, if you're classing the guest as a legend, then I'm definitely up for being a legend, believe me.
Well, the man alongside him, I guess a prodigy of Mr. Anderson when he was a player. Now in his first managerial role as gaffer at Northwood of the Isthmian South Central. Welcome to the Non-League Football Show, Rob Ursell.
Thanks very much for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure. You told me earlier that your mum used to listen to the show. I don't know whether to be pleased or what about that. But obviously you've listened many, many times as well.
Yeah, you'll be listening back to the show that was going on just after I left Wimbledon, isn't it?
Yeah.
My mum used to listen to it just because Dave was on it, and she loved listening to the radio in the background. A lot more listen to it than I.
That's about how you listened to me in the background when I was giving team talks.
It was background noise.
This is an interesting alignment of minds here, because obviously, Dave's spoken highly of you on the show in recent weeks as well.
I will.
Obviously, I know you as a player, and now you're there as a manager. Dave does the gaffer tapes, and he's always, one of the questions he asks, did everybody always think you were going to be a manager? Now, let me ask Dave Anderson, did you always think Rob was going to be a manager?
Wow. I think at the time, absolutely not. Not once did I ever think. Looking back at, and I've said on here before, he was always had an opinion, because we used to fight all the way into the games in the car and then debate them all the way out, didn't we, Rob? It's true, isn't it?
It is true.
You know, so I always knew it an opinion, and wasn't scared to back it up or disagree with you. And we used to have some good debates. So that when I look back, so it then surprises me less. But no, I really didn't. I'll be interested to see what the wizard thinks himself. So
I always knew I was going to do some form of management, and obviously coaching anyway. But I mean, I was coaching from probably when I was 18. I was coaching kids in holiday camps and stuff like that. But I didn't know it was going to be in non-league. I thought I'd moved away from it, from football completely, when I'd gone into futsal full-time. I came back from Cyprus and I played for a world-class futsal coach, Alberto Riquet. He won the World Cup in futsal and the Euros, which, it's not like the level I've played futsal at. It's a proper, it's a world-class level, elite level of sport. I learned a lot from him, and it made me want to go into it. He left because the money fell out, and we had almost a world-class squad, mix of world-class squad and international-class squad, I'd say, in the English league, which was not a world-class league at all. Yeah. But we lost all those players, and I had to take over. I took over the club as manager without a budget or anything like that. And I had to kind of recreate a team from scratch, really, which by the end of the season I'd managed to do. So, it was always something I wanted to do was manage. I just didn't think it would come back to football.
You've mentioned the futsal there, something I was going to come on to later, but while we're there, obviously we'll talk about your playing career in non-league a little bit later, but you mentioned your time in Cyprus there as a pro in the futsal league. Yeah, right. We hear a lot about futsal across Europe, and we know how it can help players, improve their game, their touch and that. Do you think the value of futsal was still underrated in this country?
It's underrated and completely misunderstood at the moment.
Why?
People think it's street football and a load of tricks. It's really not. If you watch,
you're looking at me when you say that, though, aren't you?
No, I mean, yeah. I know you. You speak like that, but yeah, like I run a futsal academy myself, and parents, they all come to me and they say, oh, he needs to work on his skills and stuff like that. And it would help me to say, yes, business-wise, it would help me to say, yes, this is exactly what this is for. Realistically, if you want to see your kid go and learn a trick, there's so many academies who are feeding into the parents wanting to see their kids do that at the expense of them being able to do the basics well, that you can go and find them. They're football academies rather than futsal academies generally, or they might be under the guise of futsal, but they're not actually futsal. What I think futsal is, to me, is learning to do things at speed, decision-making. Like, you're faced with a lot more decisions in the game, and you're forced to make them a lot quicker. And you have to think about the game more tactically than I ever had to before.
I'm no genius. Well, I'm no genius in other sports.
But say no more.
But without the ball in futsal?
I went to Cyprus and I got exposed. I played for England.
So just after you left me? Because I could have told them that one. No. Seriously, you know, because I always think tactics are about when you haven't got the ball. Go on.
It's both. Like, it's when you haven't got the ball and when you've got the ball. But the hardest thing for me when I went to Cyprus, I played for England against Cyprus, and England were, and less so now, very tactically limited. But we beat Cyprus, who had a full-time league, had some tactical players. We beat them 4-2, and I played really well individually, which I'd always relied on my individual qualities. So they signed me, the team that was top of the league in France, a few months later, and I think they expected something different than what they got. And after one training session, I remember one of the players said to me, "You're just playing with your talent. You don't know what you're doing." And they put me on, like, and we'd always concede a goal when they put me on because I haven't got my body in the right position where I can see the ball and the player. I wasn't ready for that level of movement. In football, especially non-league, in football though as well, you can hide a forward player or something like that. You can hide them in the defensive phases. Just give them a very simple job to do. Stop the fullback coming out, for example, which was a lot of the time my job at Wimbledon. Stop the fullback coming out, stand in a position where they're not gonna go past you, basically. It was a simple job. I didn't really have to think about it much. It was easy. Not saying I couldn't have learned, because I think I could have learned. And I showed later on with futsal that I had the ability to take on this stuff. I just didn't have to in football. So I wasn't challenged in the defensive way, really. But in Cyprus, it was a learning curve. My dad came over to see one game in the Easter holidays. It was like a title decider there. And I didn't get 5 seconds of the game. Bearing in mind, futsal is roll on, roll off. So to not come on as a foreign player, professional player, it was like... That showed me where I was, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I got used to it, and I developed it.
And just taking it into, and obviously because it's a non-league football show, taking it into where you are now, that sort of knowledge of with and without the ball, can you incorporate it into what you're doing at Northwood?
Yes, but what? I'm remembering now is, as I've said, non-league players are less open to learning tactically than futsal players. So I am bringing some futsal players in, and they're texting me, "Oh, how are we going to press in this situation?" How non-league players are like, "I'm a winger."
yeah. Listen, winger. There's other words that begin with W. You can think of as well.
So it's finding the balance and, like...
Surely you've got to... Because I quite like what you're saying. Cause so surely you've then got to... No. Listen, this is... You're going to have to take this up. You're going to have to open your mind to this stuff. Is that going to be part of your management?
I have said that in training. We don't have a load of time to train from now to the end of the season, and it's only about staying up.
Yeah.
So I'm limited to what I'm going to implement at this stage of the season. Last Thursday in training... I tried to do some structured stuff with getting out of press, which is borrowing a lot from futsal. And even I had futsal players doing some of the roles, but it's not something you can implement in half an hour. No. And I said to them, there's no way I'm going to ask you to do something you're not ready to do on the pitch on a Saturday because you'll get.
So part one, basically, Rob, is get safe. Yeah. Part two comes because then you get a whole pre-season with your players, really. Is that how you see it?
And it could be before pre-season. I'm hopeful that we can get enough results where the last month or so of the season, we might be able to coach and not worry about the results solely. But at the moment, that's not the case. Next year, assuming everything goes all right, I do want us to look a little bit different to the other non-league teams that you'll go and watch.
Yeah, I know we are the non-league show, and we will get on to the non-league focus. But I've always been intrigued by futsal because obviously, being local, we got Brunel University local, big futsal fraternity there, and you've played at the highest level futsal for this country, and still you're about the only person that I've ever had a conversation about futsal with. You know, where does non-league need to embrace futsal? Maybe to as Dave's saying, you know, could that be a way of non-league improving out there, or does it need to go lower at schools? And
futsal is every kid that's growing up now is playing futsal. Every top level kid is growing up playing futsal and football now. Like, they're all in an academy like mine. If they're at Chelsea or Arsenal or Tottenham, they're also playing futsal. And the clubs are not stopping them from doing that like they would be a Sunday league football team. They're encouraging them to go and play futsal as well. So 10 years from now, every player that comes into non-league pretty much is going to have fallen out of an academy or whatever. They're going to have grown up with a futsal background. So they're going to have a lot more tools at their disposal than the current non-league player, I think.
Let me just say, why does... So you, what you're more or less telling us is how a non-league footballer can't be a futsal player. I'm not saying can't, but you know that. But what must a futsal player have to take on board to become a non-league player, if that makes sense? Can they?
Well, this is what we're trying to see now. I'm trying to see now. I've brought three of my sign-ins are futsal players. One of them has played for Hendon, played for Beaconsfield, played for England six-a-side of me. So he's not a stranger to 11-a-side. One of them is Brazilian, the best futsal player in the country right now. He is just too good to not adapt to it, like too good. And then one is my favourite player to play with, probably. He's very small, if any of the Norfolk fans saw him last week. But he's got amazing sharpness, amazing tactical understanding, amazing technical quality. And I couldn't guarantee that he's suddenly going to be able to be a really good non-league player. But I think he is, and I've got to trust what I think. So when people are asking, where's this player played before, and it sounds like he's never played or whatever, I've played with players from all different types of football. I've not just played for England in futsal. I've played for them in beach soccer and six-a-side as well. I've played in non-league football. I've been at academies at youth level and stuff like that. So I've got probably one of the most varied backgrounds in football that you could have. So it's not like I'm just randomly saying this guy can come in and play football. I'm not doing that. I'm doing it because I think it for a reason, because I've played with them.
You've experienced it all with your thought. Yeah.
And you mentioned there, you know, a wide variety of experience of football there. You know, as an attacking midfielder, I think you grace Northwood. I certainly saw you play for Northwood, Hereford United. This guy's team at AFC Wimbledon. Carshorten Athletic, Hendon, Wootton Casuals, Chertsey Town, Wingate and Finchley. Is there any others? Is your list as long
That's
as
more
Dave's?
Than I remember.
Yeah, well, there you go. but as a player, clearly more skillful than maybe others alongside him. Did that ever frustrate you?
No, I quite enjoyed it. I quite enjoyed looking down on others.
It earned you the wizard nickname, didn't it?
I couldn't say I was like shy about it or anything. I enjoyed being like able to do things that like people would kind of, that would excite people and people would talk about after the game and stuff like that. I enjoyed it. I know within that, like, there's a flip side, and I wasn't like developed in terms of like mentally. I wasn't developed in terms of the team stuff, the tactical stuff. I wasn't as strong as some of the players or as quick as some of the players, but I would never change what the type of player I was.
I think at Wimbledon he listen, I've known a long time and I've given as much stick as I've given praise, to be fair, but he's the one player. I got asked in an interview not so long ago to name one player. I forget what the interview was, whether it was a written interview or it's his name. Now, listen, I've had hundreds of thousands of players, you know, like 2,000 a month nearly. Yeah, you know, and Rob knows this. He's been in my dressing rooms. I don't suffer fools too long. And I got asked to name one. And you think I've got Nicky Pope in there, who's played for England, James Shea, who's, you know, Wimbledon, Luton. I've had great players like for 30 years, and he's the one I named because he was so different. He was like, he was just a circus act doesn't do him justice. That's just my mentality, and he knows that. But he's done things on a football field that you would pay money to see, and you'd come back to see. And at that particular time at Wimbledon, I wish the pitch had been better, to be fair. The pitch wasn't great at the time. And I wish I'd have maybe stuck with the system I played in the first year, because I changed it in the second year, which pushed Rob away. And realistically, and when you look back in hindsight, I should have just went, go and do what you want. But which he did anyway. Yeah,
actually, what happened was you changed it in... Because you remember I went up to Chester with Mickey Warner.
That's right, yeah.
So
yeah.
I broke my toe. I played for the reserves and I broke my toe. I scored after 5 minutes, but in scoring, I broke my toe. And then I was out for maybe 3 weeks.
That's right, yeah.
And when I was out, that's when he changed the system.
That's right, yeah.
And then when I came back, I don't know. Well, obviously, if you've played 4-4-2 for so long or whatever, he stayed with the system. But that also coincided with the pitches starting to get worse. So the second half of the season, in the first season, I was a lot less effective. It wasn't like I wasn't doing anything for the team, but I was a lot less effective. And then I think that put in his mind, I'm just speaking from my perspective,
yeah.
I think that put in Dave's mind for next season, we're going up a league, can't really build the team around one player like that in case they just aren't as good as what they were earlier in the season. Or
I think even the game's even changed now. You know, if I was doing it today, I'd do it. Because I think the game lends itself more to ability now than it did 20 years ago.
Yeah, it does.
And I'm the dent, and he knows this. I am absolutely chalked to his cheese, you know. But it does. And when I look back, I think I'd have liked to have seen a bit more of him. But then you had a couple of injuries as well that slowed you down a bit. Entertainment value was... both in the car and on the pitch for different reasons was very good. And when you hear Rob speak, people take him up the wrong way, and maybe the way I talk about him doesn't help that, but he knows it's in jest, absolutely in jest. But when you hear him talking, he's not a mug. He's not a guy. He's not a sea lion from a circus that flicks the ball up his nose and goes,
do that.
Yeah. But he's got a mind behind it. And I knew that. That's the one thing I did know from day one, because we used to travel together, and I had people who were 6'4" who wouldn't say boo to me. And this guy would argue all the way in and all the way out, you know. So, and we always got on well with it.
So we often talk about, you know, who the managers you play under, how that influences you then as a manager. Has this guy influenced the way that you're going to be a manager?
Yeah, absolutely. No, he has. The way he's like treated me and other players as well. Obviously, I've seen some moments where he probably hasn't treated players as well. But generally, he's respected people and tried to be as honest as he could. And that is, I don't know whether that's something I've taken just from Dave, but probably... one of the managers that has been most direct with me, which I appreciate, and as well, I keep saying about the chairman now, Ian Barry at Northwood, like, yeah, we're going to argue or whatever, but I do appreciate that he's going to tell me when he's got a problem, which I want to try and take into my management. Sometimes that's hard to be like confrontational like that, but I mean, I think I'm fine with it, to be honest, that's definitely something I'll take from Dave. And like, also, I would like to be able to motivate the way he has the dressing room at Wimbledon. Whether I can do that might not be in me to scream at them in certain ways, but it's definitely something that I'd like to take into my management. Yeah.
What about you? I mean, you're still a young man. How does that work now when you're similar age to the players that you're bringing through and asserting your authority in the dressing room?
I definitely think I'd do it in a different way to Dave, just because it's not my character.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, there's no
I don't have a problem with it. I did it with futsal. I know it's a different sport, but it's the same thing managing
people. Sorry, Andrew, but that must really... I mean, because that's the one thing that people, well, they'll get after this, is though it's your first job, it's not your first job, because I think management in football, whether it be futsal, football, beach, whatever you're doing in management, it's there's lots of similarities in there. So this ain't... You don't feel naive to this, do you?
No. There's differences in terms of... In futsal, there's a smaller player pool. So you're not dealing with an agent ringing you saying, I've got this 18-year-old who used to be at...
Real Madrid.
They've all played at Barcelona.
Yeah. I was going to say clubs there, but whatever club I say, it's going to sound rude. But any old club or whatever. I'm not getting that so much in futsal, because in futsal, it's a smaller community. I know people. I'm left to work with basically the players that I've got and maybe one or two that I try and find from somewhere else. Here, that's the difference with football, is that I'd probably prefer it to get a settled squad and just work with that squad. I'd prefer that. But it's never going to happen, because you're going to lose players because there's so many clubs chasing players. You're going to gain players because there's so many people offering you a player. That's the difference. But in terms of dealing with actually people, there's no difference at all.
And obviously, you mentioned Ian Barry there. You've gone in at Northwood. As your first job in non-league then, is that a good thing that you know the club and you've been there, they know you, and has that helped you settle?
I've never applied for a job before. So, a football management job. This was the first one I applied for. And if it was a club that I didn't know or anything, I don't think I would have even gone in for it. So I think that's the only thing. It had to be some reason why I went for this job. And that's probably the... I mean, it's a slight advantage that Alan Evans and Ian Barry, they know me. The supporters, even though I don't know them that well, I know some faces, and they're kind of a little bit... They know who I am, and they feel some familiarity with me. That's a positive. Mm. But, I mean, from now on, it's not going to make a difference. Now that I've got it and that I'm there, it's not going to make a difference to me.
But there must have been something in you then to apply for a job, because it's not the easiest of job. You're bottom of the table, and you've come in. You've only been able to have one game because of all the weather and that sort of thing. And you say some of the fans probably know you, so there is that maybe that slight additional trust that you're going to help them through. You're one of them, but. It's a tough job that you've taken on.
It is, yeah. When I applied for it, I thought there was three going down. So in theory, it's a lot easier than that, because I just have to finish second bottom. And I wouldn't say it would be a success. It wouldn't be a success to me. But it would be good enough to go into the next season with a clean slate. I don't see it as that hard a job. I've got rid of... probably eight players. When I walked in to my first friendly, the Thursday, I could sense the atmosphere it's not an atmosphere I'd like to be a part of. I don't know how to describe it. There's a bad energy in the room. It wasn't like players wanted to listen and were open to everything that a new manager was saying and wanted to impress a new manager and coach. It was more like, this guy's come in and... they've got their backs up already, kind of thing. Oh, he's going to bring his own players. And I felt that. And maybe some other comments and stuff that I heard that were really like, they didn't belong in a dressing room that's going to win some matches. So I've tried to change that very early. I think that
tells me that you're not naive in what you're doing. I think that the sooner you identify the big problem and get rid of it, the better, which for me you seem to be starting to do.
Yeah, and I mean, that doesn't mean anyone I've got rid of is a bad person or whatever, but
it's... You never... Listen, you don't need to apologize for what
I'm
you
not
did,
apologizing,
you know?
But or, I'm saying, you know, I'm saying, yeah, you know, I'm saying it's I've been probably a bad influence in dressing rooms. Doesn't mean I'm like this same character that I'm being for the time I'm at this club.
Yeah.
It means things have gone wrong at this club and it needs to change. And that's what I think I've had to do. I was going to say rightly or wrongly, but I know I'm right to do the things I've done. I've got no doubt that certain people had to go for the atmosphere, and that's not against them. That's what I saw very easily, and I had to do it.
I used to that used to motivate me. I used to love to find out who the bad influence was, who the guy
doesn't
was.
Take long, does it?
No, it didn't, and it didn't take me long to get rid of them, and I enjoyed it, and that used to motivate me the next week, because it, somewhere they'd be sitting going, he's going to fail. And that used to drive me to success. So I understand where Rob is, and he's trying to be a bit more diplomatic about it. I've retired, and I don't care, and I used to enjoy it. It used to give me petrol for my fire.
I mean, I don't care either. I got texts back saying, oh, I know what type of manager you are. You're just picking your mates. Jordan, like the chairman said to me, you've got Jordan as your assistant. Well, how do you know him or whatever? I've met him once. I met him once before, and he said, oh, usually managers bring the best mate or whatever. It's not. I have brought some friends with me, but they're friends because of football.
Anyway. I mean, every job you get, every job I got, they're teammates.
They're friends because of football.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
They're not friends because I met them in first school and drank milk with them.
That's an important thing. That's one that you often talk about, isn't it? Your assistant and the different relationships you need with them. When you spoke to Ian Everett the other day for Barrow, he actually interviewed.
Yeah, he interviewed us, which I'd never heard of, and he said it was the best thing he ever did. And I think inevitably you're going to become friends, otherwise. But as long as they're working, listen, John Turner, who the Wizard knows really well, me and JT have been mates for 100 years. But we would fight, argue, and debate every decision I ever made. And so you need to have someone that you trust. You need to have someone that you respect their opinion. You need to have someone who does something that you don't do. In his case, he knew people's names. He did. He was no any player in the world. He'd know who they were and what they were. I had people who played 300 times for me, and I don't know their name, you know. So you have to have people who do that. And after that, the relationship will be what it'll be. And it's the same thing, though, the same thing, which, to be fair, I did feel on at times. You should have the same rule for them as you do for players, that if it doesn't work, get rid of them. And I didn't do it. That was my downfall a couple of times.
Yeah, I mean, with Jordan, Ryan Phillips, one of the players that I've signed as well, who's also a friend, he has been telling me for like 2-3 years, you've got to get this guy to be your assistant if you ever do manage, because he thinks like you, he wants to work with someone like you. So I met with him and spoke to him about it and stuff. And yeah, I mean, I think he's someone I can work with really well. He will go on and be a manager because he's very thorough. He wants to do it. If you give him anything you want him to do, he's going to do it. And that's not like, oh, he can't do better than that. He can. He's tactically astute. He's thinking about the game, but he's very hardworking as well. So, I mean, he's going to go on and be a manager eventually. He's still young. So.
And just I've put down here points target. Have you sat down and worked out? I don't mean a points. I mean, well, I do mean a points. Have you sat down and worked out without telling us even what you feel will get you to that second bottom place? So your minimum requirement, if you want, or have you not?
It's so hard to say, but I think if we win the right games, we've still got Ashford and Staines. If we win the right games, them and Romania, if we win those three, I think we'll stay up. And they're obviously winnable games, but there's no unbeatable teams in this league. And my players that I've brought in, I'm very confident that they're good enough to win against anyone in the league. That's not to say everything's going to come together.
Well, you're about to find that out Saturday, aren't you?
That's not to say everything's going to come together this season or whatever, but they're good enough players if a team is working well to win against anyone in the league. Mm.
A tough game at the weekend against Wareham, I think top of the table again at the moment. Do you just go in and play your game? And
yeah, I suppose like no one's going to be annoyed if we lose, almost, as long as it's not a bad defeat. No one's going to be annoyed if we lose. I just want a performance, to be honest. Like, I want us to play well. I want us to play better than the Bedfont game, like significantly better. So the Bedfont game, I think a bit of feedback was like, oh, it was more positive than what we've seen for quite a few months or whatever. For me, it wasn't great. I didn't enjoy many periods of the game or anything like that. Doesn't help when you concede two in the first 8 minutes. But the fact that they've said it was a step forward is nice to hear, for me at least. And I want to step forward from that in performance. I'm not that fussed about the result because the results in the end are going to be a consequence of the performances.
Yeah.
So they'll take care of themselves.
Yeah. That again, that's not a young manager talking. That's something that takes time. You haven't gone to bed yesterday and woke up with that. That's something that's come through with your futsal management. And it's absolutely right, is that there's two things I used to say to players and dressing rooms. One is, if you get the performance right, the result looks after itself. And the other thing is, you know, stop chasing money, chase success. If you get success, you'll get money. So they're the two things. I think some players, you know, think about the result. The result is what hires and fires me and Rob now. That's what hires and fires is. It doesn't, for footballers, it should be not irrelevant, but if they get the performance right, then the result comes with it. And the other one with footballers, yeah, I want another fiver. Win something. Something and I'll give you a tenner.
An agent calling me up for a pay rise. I said, we've lost 11 in a row.
I know. That's another one, the agents. Oh, thank God I'm retired anyway.
So next week we'll be talking about the FA Trophy and FA Vars quarterfinals, and I'm sure our next guest will be talking about the plenty as well. But they've caused a few upsets in the FA Trophy, and there'll be plenty more to talk about next week. But before that, it's league action, and they've been there or thereabouts at the top of the Southern Central Division, Step 4. But this week, an impressive 5-0 win midweek. See, I put some top, for the first time this season. I'm pleased to say, how's our in-town boss, Paul Smith, joins us on the show to tell us more. Welcome to the Non-League Football Show, Paul.
Thank you.
So, that win midweek, going top, having been there and sort of in the mix-up pretty much all season, is that a good feeling?
Yeah, very good. I didn't think we'd quite get there just yet. I think it's a little bit earlier than I anticipated. We've been a number of games behind league-wise because of the good FA Trophy and FA Cup runs we've had. So it was important during January to make sure we clung onto the coattails of the top two. And I was hoping to reel them in over the next couple of months, but results elsewhere and our current form has enabled us to take top spot now. So very crucial we keep our foot on the gas and look to turn the screw.
Yeah, now someone told me many, many years ago that the way to win things is not conceding goals. Now, I think not only was it a win midweek for you, I think it was your 11th clean sheet in 16 in the league.
Yes, we've only conceded 14, I believe, in all season so far. It's a fantastic record and one we're very proud of. We work very, very hard as a squad on our defensive side of our game. And it's crucial, as you said, to go and win things. Likewise, is consistency. And at the moment, we're right where we need to be defensively, and we're scoring lots of goals too. So, yeah, I can't be more pleased at the moment. It's just important we don't take our foot off the gas and get complacent.
Yeah, Paul, I mean, it's about the millionth time I've asked this question, but you know, you're caught in the world of FA Trophy versus league, because to come as far as you have in the FA Trophy is unbelievable. So you go to Barnet. Is that just a free one, for want of a better description?
No, I've got to be honest with you. It's not a phrase I like to use, a free one. I think that showed a little bit of disrespect to the squad we've put together. Someone asked me the same question before the Halifax game and before the Maidenhead game. We've got a fantastic group of players here that I've managed to assemble from Steps 3, and a number of them have played at Step 2. So we really think, and we've got an inner belief that we're good enough to go and beat anyone on our day. So we'll go down there with renewed vigour. We'll give it everything we've got, and we think we can cause another upset. So we're confident in our ability, and I've got a great bunch. So no, it's not definitely not a freebie. There's a hell of a lot to lose. We're looking to. We've filled 8 coaches already.
Wow.
The number of minibuses going down. So we should be talking in and around the region of 600 or 700 our own fans there. So a free hit for me is nothing like what I'm going to go there to do. We're going to go and beat Barnet. That's our aim. That's what we look to try and do. And we'll give it our best shot. If we're not good enough on the day, we're not good enough. But we firmly believe that we've got a shot at it.
Yeah, excellent. I've no argument with that. I've wrote down here. I've actually wrote down twice now. Big club, Hailzone. You know, it's a big club, and the fact that you're saying about the amount of supporters that you'll take with you just emphasises what a big club it is. So, realistically, is promotion's a must as well, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. I came in the summer, no disrespect to people that were there previously, but the fans have had a barren time over the last 3 or 4 years, constantly fighting relegation and unfortunately getting relegated last year. So when the club came in for me in the summer, I was delighted to take it. It was a wounded animal as such, but you're completely right. It's a huge, huge club. There was a connection lost between management, playing staff and fans, and the first thing I thought I needed to do was to get that connection back and hopefully start bringing the numbers back into the club. And our fan base has took to me and my players as much as we've took to them. They've been fantastic for us. And, you know, we had nearly 600 there on Tuesday, a cold Tuesday night. So the fans are coming back in numbers. They're enjoying the ride, and we're enjoying, hopefully, bringing them some long-due success.
I might even go to the game, because it's one of them that I always feel that when you're up against someone that's a couple of divisions above you, first of all, have you done your homework? Have you watched them? Have you a game plan? Or how do you go about? Are you a team that does that stuff, or you just deal with who you are?
No. It's sort of, we probably go a little bit too in depth. I'm a little bit of a strange when it comes to my football. So we've had them watch twice already. I've got 2 scouts, one. Who's my main scout who goes to watch every opposition. So it's not just Barnet. Every league club we come up against, whether it be Axley, Wantage, Corby, I have them watched at least once, hopefully twice before we play them. So I've got in-depth reports on them, every kind of opposition. So he's already been and watched Barnet once. He's going again this weekend. So I'll have another in-depth report on them. So hopefully we'll know all about their strengths and weaknesses. And we'll look to try and put that in place with some training sessions up until then. What's crucial for me is the 2 league games before that. Like I say, the league title is what I'm aiming for. That's what I was brought in to go and get. I firmly believe that we've got a great shot at it. And these 2 league games are vital for that, because we're on a great run of form, and I need that to continue to go into the Barnet game.
And just last one from me, Paul. You said about having a good squad. You feel your squad's big enough and strong enough to undertake both events. But will you look to add to it for the running, or are you happy with what you've got?
No, I'm really happy. We've got 20 very good players, and I've got 2 at the moment. Long-term injuries in Reece Hewitt and George Forsyth. That are fantastic, fantastic players who are very, very close to being back, and they'll be like 2 new signings for me. So, no, I've got full faith in this group of players. Unless there's a glut of injuries, then I won't be looking to add anything. It's nice and tight. It's all pulling in the same direction. They're buying into the rotation policy, which I've been doing for a number of years in a managerial career. And hopefully they can see the just rewards towards the end of the season.
You mentioned all the coaches coming down to watch you in the trophy, but obviously, I think the crowd on midweek for that 5-0 win, 513. It was a cold, wet, windy Tuesday evening to get that number down. It's not just the players that are buying into what you're doing; it's obviously the crowd and the local people as well.
Yeah, like I touched on previously, there was a disconnect between the club and the fans when I arrived. It was there to be seen. The crowds were dwindling last year, and there was sort of 150, 200 tops. So it was important to start playing a good brand of football and start winning games again, reaching out to the local community, because years gone by, there's been a huge Hailzone following. Yeah. So it was important we started to win some games. I reached out, I went and met fans' forums, done certain things in and around the community to try and bring them back, and slowly but surely, they've started to return in numbers, and as the season's gathered pace, as the FA Trophy gathers pace, as you know, a big cup run it adds interest, doesn't it? So as that's been going, as well as this tilt on the title, they've been coming back in their droves, and luckily, by hook or by crook, we've been playing some lovely stuff, scoring lots of good goals and winning matches, and that's always the big thing that fans want. So we've got a sort of recipe for success in trying to bring them in. I explained to them how important they are and how important their support is to the boys. And like I said to you before, we've got that relationship back, and long may that continue.
And what about everything else off the field? You know, Dave mentioned Howe's Own, a big club, and it's a name that the people would certainly recognise. Going up to that next level as well, is the club ready to compete at the next level already where you are?
Yeah, in the last 18 months, the club behind the scenes, again, without saying disrespect to anyone, has been in a right mess up until the last 18 months. Two new owners came in Karen Books and Keith McKenna, and they've turned the club around. There's no two ways about it. The club's debt-free now, and it's absolutely flying off the scenes. It was very important then they got a manager in that could try and match their ambitions. I was delighted to take the job in the summer, and over this last week, I've signed an 18-month rolling contract. Now, I'd never have done that here unless the club matched my ambitions, and we're both in the same basket now. We want to try and push this club into conference football. It's a big task, it's a big ask, but we believe we've got the fan base, the infrastructure now to be able to go and challenge for that. So, yeah, we're all geared up, we're looking forward to it, and we think this is just the beginning of a real good journey for us.
Yeah, so, top of the table, after that win midweek, you've got a big FA Trophy game coming up next weekend, and then you've got to go away to AFC Dunstable this weekend. How do you motivate those lads for this league game to make sure that everybody's in the right state of mind?
Yeah, I only bring in players to a football club that I feel are tick all the boxes for me. So there won't be any need to motivate them for a league game. They're very honest bunch. They know exactly what we're looking to try and do this year. And they understand the importance of the league games. Hence why we put in such a good performance against Yaxley on Tuesday. You know, Yaxley came into the game having won 7 and drew 1 of the last 8 unbeaten this year. And without saying disrespectful, there was large margins between the two sides and a 5-0 victory. So, yeah, there's no problems with getting boys up for league games. They're a great bunch. It's just very, very important. We make sure we keep them on it, keep them working hard. We're in tonight, we'll go again. But I have no problems in getting them up for it. We just need to get down there and do the job. And I'm sure if we perform as high as we can, we're good enough to go and get a result there.
Well, it certainly sounds like you've got all the ducks in the row, and everything seems to be lining up nicely and well organised. Considering you've only been in the role since the start of the season as well, you're doing a very good job. But we will be keeping an eye on how things progress.
Absolutely.
Best of luck this weekend, but also a massive luck in the FA Trophy as well. And we'll keep an eye on that. But thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show.
Thank you. Really appreciate it. Good man.
Chaps, another manager, slightly different fortunes from yourself, Rob. It sounds like he's got a healthy budget, I would have thought, to be able to have a rolling rota of 20 odd players, and
probably similar to ours.
I'm sure Mr. Barry's allowed you to have 20 players. It just can't all be paid.
We had 25 at training last week.
it shows that if you can get a bit of success behind you. They've had a great FA Cup run. He mentioned the trophy, the two great wins over higher level opposition. Once you do get that right ethos in the dressing room and you can get the players playing for each other and getting that confidence. You said when you first went into Northwood, there was a slight disconnect, as Paul suggested there. If you get that right, things can snowball, can't they?
Yeah, and I'll give Rob a chance to answer this as well. That's so easy to say. So easy to say, so hard to do. And if you're lucky, you'll do it. If you do it at every club, you're very, very good. If you do it all the time at every club, you're not in non-league. And if you do it all the time, you're top of the tree. But it's a very easy thing to say and a very difficult thing to do. But you're right. Once it gets there, I wouldn't say it's the easiest job in the world, but it nearly becomes self-managing because standards are then within the players. They self-manage.
I think you can't, there's levels to it. So Dave's speaking now about getting it to like this perfect dressing room. Mm. You can't have a bad atmosphere, I don't think, and have a decent team. It's just not going to happen. You can play whatever style you want or whatever, but you can't have a bad atmosphere in a changing room and expect people to play at close to their optimum, I don't think.
Yeah, I think the other one that someone said, I mean, it might have been Gary McCann said the other week, don't send good players, send good people. And that equates to what the dressing room becomes. But I must add, talking about Dunstable, where Hillzone won 5-0, when I was at Wimbledon, we played Dunstable in the FA Cup at Dunstable, and Rob scored a hat trick and won player of the round and ended up at Wembley. Do you remember?
Yep.
You know, with one of the balls, which I had him dribbling around a bar in Cardiff from a mate in Belfast, which is a whole different story. but yeah, Dunstable, I just wrote it down. I says, yeah, memories.
There was a streaker there as well. They showed that on Soccer AM, but none of my goals.
Yeah. so it's funny how these names chuck themselves up at you, you know.
Now, we love a good yarn on the Non-League Football Show, so when I spotted this one, I thought this was a perfect fit. I thought about tailoring the introduction, but this is the best I could do, because this is a yarn about a yarn. News of kit that is not only more eco-friendly in its production, but also smarter than the average crate of plastic bottles used to create it. To tell us more, Rick Dennis of Kit Company Hope and Glory. Welcome to the Non-League Football Show, Rick.
Thank you. Thank you, Alan.
I saw this message drop into the Twitter account. I've dropped a few hints, but basically, this is your new eco kit made from recycled plastic bottles. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, basically, we've been supplying kits for clubs now for new companies for them to do it for one season, but we've been quite strong on sustainability myself, so we've been looking into this for a good 6-7 months now, and basically, we've come to the end now where Eco kit is launched. It's basically a kit made from, as we said, recycled plastic bottles. So the material uses 90% less water to make the material. It creates a 65% less size carbon footprint than the virgin polyester. Uses 70% less energy again to create than virgin polyester. It's just a good thing, basically. I think more brands should be doing it. The big boys do it at the minute, so your Nike and Adidas, you can get it if you're Spurs or Man United, but we kind of aim at the lower league, so your non-league. We want to offer this kit to non-league clubs that wouldn't normally be able to get hold of a recycled polyester shirt.
Yeah, you say the big boys can have access for it via the bigger companies. I mean, they've been doing it, but are big clubs actually using recycled kit, or is it just just another line that goes in the superstore one of these big clubs?
I'm not sure. I think Manchester United did it a couple of years ago, where they had, I think, their third kit was made from the rPET, the recycled polyester. But other than that, I think they're just using the standard stuff.
So what about the quality then? Is it as good as the standard polyester shirts that our lads are wearing up and down the country?
Yeah, it behaves exactly the same, because from the yarn, the process is exactly the same as making the virgin polyester shirts. So as soon as you get to the yarn, from that way forward, it's exactly the same process. It's just the making of the yarn that is different.
So basically, the bottles, people collect their plastic bottles, stick them in recycling, they're all washed, separated, shredded down into little...
Sorry to interrupt, Rick. How many bottles per shirt?
Roughly. It's hard to say size of bottle, size of shirt, but it's around 16 bottles we're going to making one shirt.
Mine's
so the size of material is 16 bottles.
Yeah, I would say mine's 25 bottles minimum. Minimum.
Dave can't get his head around the fact that it's not just a load of bottles someone's wearing on their chest.
Strapped together on your body.
That is honestly what he thinks it is.
I am absolutely stunned by this. I think it's unbelievable. I think it's unbelievable. Why haven't we heard about it? Why isn't there more of it? Why isn't it on headline news?
I think it was Nike that did it for the World Cup or the Euros over there, where all of their national sides, so Belgium, Holland, were all wearing an rPET shirt or an rPET kit. but then it seems to have died down from there. It's not as big as it should be, like I say. It's not as big as it should be.
Well, particularly where, you know, being green, reducing your carbon footprint, reducing your use of water, it's everywhere else in our world. And we often say about the size, the clout of non-league football and, you know, how we can change things. So it was I suppose this is an opportunity to change the world.
Exactly. It is. And like I said, clubs can take it. We can offer it to any size club. It doesn't even have to be a non-league club. You can be a Sunday league team and we can supply it. There's no minimum orders, no anything. It's good to go for everybody. And that's why I don't understand why the Nike and the Adidas aren't doing that.
Well, what about cost, Rick? You know, would it... against
On average, compared to us, so we not depending on quantity size, we normally sell our shirts to clubs between 17 and 19 plus the VAT. So these would come in at £3 more just due to the manufacturing process. It's still got that extra process right at the start, so it's just a little bit more expensive for us to buy the material in the first place.
Well, surely there's got to be a government scheme somewhere where you can go and ask them for that £3 for, you know, go, well, we'll pay the seven.
Yeah.
The fifth, whatever, I don't even know what a football shirt costs these days, but it says 15. The government adds the other two because it's eco-friendly. It's a winner, isn't it?
Yeah, you think so.
Dave's a new man.
Rob, we heard about, you know, your football prowess around the globe and for other teams and that. Is this something you've come across elsewhere?
I've not heard about it, to be honest. I'm less surprised than Dave, but I've not heard directly about recycled football kits, no.
And so is this just the shirts then, Rick, or is this socks and shorts? And yeah, is it the modern-day non-league footballer wants more training kit than you know, most teenage kids, I think? Is it?
At the minute, it's just the shirts and the shorts, or what would normally be made out of the polyester. The socks are still the socks. We are working on it at the minute though as well to be able to bring a range of your tracksuits, stadium jackets made from the same process, so from the same yarn. Like I say, it's the yarn, it's the beginning process that's the recycled part. As soon as you hit the yarn, then the process is exactly the same. So we can get the yarn, make it into the material and make the stadium jackets and run to a winner.
So for me, see, I'm thinking outside the box here. If I was in management, we used to drink on average two cases of water a game. Two cases of bottled water. So if we save dollar anties, we could have a trade-in, can we? We could go, there's 400 bottles. Can we have a shirt for a fiver? You know, it's... But I'm amazed. But I think it's a... Why aren't we doing it? That's my question.
That's why we've got Rick on.
Yeah.
I'm surprised when we looked into it that at the minute, we're, as far as I can see, we're the only small brand that are doing it.
What are the costs like for clubs to go with your the eco-friendly kit?
Sorry, say that again.
What are the costs like compared to like a normal kit?
Yeah, so like I said, per garment, so for a shirt and shorts, it's around £3 more than we charge for the standard pair of shorts or shirts. Depending on quantities, the prices change between 17 and 19 for a shirt, between 10 and 11.50 for shorts. Obviously, then that bumps it up to between 20 and 22.50 for a shirt, between 13 and 14.50 for shorts. So it is more expensive, but it's the feel, the fact that it comes with it. And I think a lot of fans out there at the minute, if they're buying the replicas, if it gets to that stage where the club are selling replicas, they wouldn't mind putting that extra little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, you can get to the boring bit as well about the plastic bottles, how many plastic bottles are around the world. It's estimated that I think 1 million plastic bottles are sold in the world per day.
Wow. And then, you've blown my mind. I haven't got any more questions.
The lifespan of a plastic bottle is, if it's just done naturally, for it to break down and disintegrate and disappear, is 400 plus years.
Listen, I'd kid at Horrorborough that was older than that. Our Kipman could keep it going. That's unbelievable. So, and it's a serious note. So, 400 years for a bottle to break down. How much for a shirt to break down?
Well, you wouldn't break a shirt down, hopefully. You keep the shirt forever. It'd be the same process. It's at the end of the day, the shirt is then polyester fabric, so it's going to have We were speaking to a guy the other day from a club local to us, and he suggested, well, why don't we, once the shirt's come to its lifetime end at the club, then package that, get the shirt back before the new shirts come out, and package that shirt off to the causes that were for teams that need them.
Yeah.
And countries that need them. Yeah. So again, we like the shirt life, getting an extra life, rather than the club comes to the end of using that kit for a season, then they just get binned or whatever. Then we can package that shirt back up, send it back to us, and then we can ship that off to countries that, that need the kit. There's so, lots of charities out there that do that.
Yeah. So Rick, we've got you in. You got you on because you're launching this eco kit today, I believe. If people want to know some more information, get in touch with you. How can they go about that?
Yeah, the easiest way is probably to go straight onto our website, which is hgsportswear.co.uk. All the information's on there. Contact details are on there. And then if people get in touch, if you want more information, you can give us a call, drop us an email. Happy to help. Happy to give the information out.
Well, Rick, thank you for joining us, and thank you for blowing Dave Anderson's mind. I'll clean up the mess afterwards.
I have to say, you don't need a lot of dynamite to do that, but it was.
We wish you well with the project. I know you're already supply kits, non-eco kits at the moment to other clubs in non-league, and hopefully there'll be a few more taken up, and hopefully we can make a difference to the world at non-league.
Brilliant, thank you. We'll keep in touch.
Every day's a learning day, Dave.
That's every day's a school day. The other thing I would say with Rob Ursel is if they can make a kit out of crisp packets, then he could serve the whole league. Let me tell you, but that's good. I think that's good stuff. That, and maybe it's been out there, but I've never heard of it before.
Well, it has been out there. I think the thing with Hope and Glory is they're looking at it as a supply it to everybody. Where it's always been, it's been a bit more with the bigger companies. It's been a gimmick. It's been a nice PR. There's a press release, and as he said, I think Man United had one of their third kits, and no one's seen it since. Hopefully, this can, bring it. Hopefully, people are stopping drinking out of plastic bottles that we're drinking out of it in the studio today. But it's while we still are, as you're saying, the number of bottles that clubs get through on a match day, it's just within the bar.
Yeah.
So if there was a little again, should we throw it out to the FA? Yeah, maybe they could coordinate something, a collection or something like that. But
I think the big thing you want to do is get it down to the same costing as a normal shirt, and then you're on a winner. Until that,
I think that's a hard sell for normally.
And it, £3 a shirt,
chairman,
Rob's learning all about that now,
So let's round off the show and head on over to Non-League Paper Towers. Welcome back to the Non-League show. It's senior writer David Richardson. Welcome, David.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having me on.
It's always a pleasure, particularly in a week where, it's been fairly quiet, really, isn't it? It's I see Lee Fowler's back in football, now at Radcliffe Borough as manager. Former clubs Nuneaton and Ilkeston. He likes to choose a club that has a rocky path.
Yeah, potentially it looks like that way. He's sort of maybe not been too lucky with, I suppose, in his sort of previous two jobs in terms of sort of off-field problems. That said, he has done well there. Obviously, Ilkeston got them promoted, like I said, sort of, I think off-field things there eventually sort of told. But good to see him back in at Radcliffe. He's obviously one of our non-league paper columnists, so I'm sure we'll be getting sort of the inside track on how things are going there for the remaining few months and beyond. But good for him to get back in. Really, I think. He's quite highly thought of around non-league. Obviously, we remember him from his playing days, but I think now in management, he certainly seems to be coming across, so to speak. And we wish him well at Radcliffe.
Yeah, and another guy who seems to be sticking around, John Pemberton at Chesterfield.
Yeah, that's right. I spoke to John not long ago, earlier today, and I think. As he said to me, it wasn't sort of when he went back into Chesterfield there. Obviously, he had been the academy manager before he left to go to Kidderminster. So I think that he was saying that he sort of you know, however long the club needed him to be there, he'd be there and try to help them out. It wasn't really something he was thinking about, you know, were they going to keep me on or not? Is someone else going to come in? He was just sort of getting on with the job in hand, and he's certainly been doing that. Obviously, taking 10 points from a possible 15 from the games that he's been in there. And, you know, when he first went in there, Chesterfield were 5 points adrift, and now I think they're only one from safety. So, yes, it's good to see that he'll be getting a chance to continue his good work there. And, you know, he knows what that club's all about. And I think in these last few weeks, he's re-established the connection between the players and the fans. And obviously that helps when you're winning games. But nonetheless, you know, I think it's sort of long overdue, tiny bit of a success there really for Chesterfield since the turn of the year. And again, hopefully you can continue that going forward to the end of the season. Obviously, the remit stays the same and they have to try and avoid relegation.
Yeah, and I'd said it's been quiet. It's been very busy times for certain clubs with all the storm damage, and we wish all those clubs well and hope that they can get themselves sorted and get some games on and start getting some finance back in as well. But it also plays havoc with the games that have nearly got on and a couple of abandonments as well I've seen this week. I know my own team, Hayes and Yedding, had their game called off last Saturday at Hendon on a 3G pitch, and we're thinking, we're going to be guaranteed a game here, until it was called off, I think, 3 minutes before kickoff because the corner flags wouldn't stand up.
Yeah, that was one of our feature games in the paper last weekend, and we were sort of, like you say, banking on the 3G pulling through and, you know, hopefully the sort of safety concerns being okay around the game. So that was a little bit disappointing for ourselves, and I'm sure it was Hayes and Hendon as well, and the supporters there who would have been ready to see the game. But no, it was that sort of weekend last week where games are going off everywhere, and you know, and there's much sort of more serious sort of cases with clubs. Obviously, with sort of Tecaster saying that you know, they were considering folding because of yet more damage from flooding to their pitch and their clubhouse. So you know, it hasn't sort of been a great few weeks in terms of the weather, and obviously, yeah, again, you know, it doesn't really sort of seem to be easing up any more, particularly going into this weekend and also this week. You know, I think there's a few more showers for sure.
Yeah, it's going to be a scrambling to try and get games on, because obviously, you know, every club's desperate to get the game on, because we're running out of season, and obviously without the game on, there's no revenue coming in normally.
Yeah, that's right. And I think probably one of the things as well from last weekend was where a pitch may have been okay, it was the concerns for supporters getting to the game and you know, being stood on the terraces and in those sort of conditions. So that was another thing referees and officials had to sort of take into account last week. It's a difficult scenario, really, like you say, trying to sort of, at this stage of the season, trying to sort of get the games in. Probably if you've got a promotion to try and win or to try and stay in the division, you don't particularly want to be cramming in games on a Saturday, Tuesday, and maybe even a Thursday as well, going into that sort of final month after what has already been a grueling season. So yeah, I think there's probably a little bit of a scramble going on at the moment to try and get games on. So hopefully it eases off this weekend and we see a few more fixtures being played.
Yeah, and obviously clubs with concerns over fixture congestion include those in the FA VARs, not this weekend, next weekend. But I know, I think you've been doing some previews ahead of this weekend because there's so many stories around the FA VARs and the quarterfinalists that are there.
Yeah, very much so. We've spoken to all of the quarterfinalists for our Sunday's paper, and yeah, like you say, there's plenty of stories going around. I spoke to Lee Hobbs at Plymouth Parkway, who has to go all the way up to Heaven, a sort of 800-mile round trip there for them. They are somewhat used to the away trips now, because all their other ties, apart from their one in the last round, have been away from home. but nonetheless, that's a long old journey. I've also been speaking to Bitten and manager Dan Langdon over there, who might be appearing himself next week. The 30-year-old sort of, I think, hung up his boots a few years ago, although still steps in emergencies as a goalkeeper. But his current goalkeeper, Rob Brown, is suspended at the moment, so they're hoping they get in a couple of games before next weekend, so he'll be available. Otherwise, the manager will be stepping in between the sticks. So that's sort of one of the more bizarre tales of next weekend to come, and we'll keep an eye on how that one pans out.
Yeah, and some good news this week. Basingstoke have been granted planning permission to take their Winklebury ground up to Grade C standards, the one that they share with Hampshire FA, but they're not being able to play there at the moment, playing their games at Winchester City. And I know there's been various bits and pieces on social media about the old Camrose ground that they've moved out of, and an old Covenant document being found. But at least this news, providing they can sort out the funding, it means that Basingstoke can move forward with a positive future.
Yeah, hopefully. Sort of an ongoing saga really at Basingstoke with their ground. This is positive news, like you say, to get planning permission to be able to upgrade that site to what they need to remain at where they currently are in the pyramid. That said, they will need the funds to be able to carry out those improvements. And obviously the clock's ticking. With the March 31st deadline coming up, if they're able to sort of sort plans and work and start, then I think a league allows them more time beyond that deadline. But I think the issue now is basically getting the funding to be able to do those things. Now I think the club are trying to get some money from Rafi Razak, who of course used to be chairman there at the club and owns the Camrose site, but again, like I say, that's an ongoing thing, which has been going for a while, and I'm not sure sort of how much light there is at the end of the tunnel in terms of securing that funding. I think it's I spoke to Terry Brown, who's now the chairman of Basingstoke, a couple of weeks ago, and he was saying it's very much going sort of to a crisis or a crunch point now for the club. So it's something they need to sort out, otherwise they could very seriously be struggling to be playing next season and beyond.
Yeah, it is a disappointing tale of non-league, really, isn't it? We like to celebrate the successes, the FA Vars, FA Trophy, FA Cup earlier on the season, the clubs that are going up and getting promotion, but to be honest, the majority of our clubs struggle day to day just to keep the doors open. It just needs some help from any direction. If you've got a few hours, a spare £10 though, it can help your local football club.
Yeah, no, it does go a long way. I think hours that volunteers put in are somewhat comparable to money and sort of how far that goes for a club as well. Like you say, there are sort of as many bad stories and difficult times for non-league clubs as there are good, really. Sadly, this is sort of the latest one, really, Basingstoke. So we hope they can find some sort of solution to continue, because it's a club you always consider with a pretty rich history in non-league, always been around those sort of top tiers. The Camrose is pretty iconic, really. It would be such a shame not to see them playing there in the future. I'm really not sure sort of what's going to happen really going forward.
So you've already mentioned FA Vars previews, bits and pieces with John Pemberton. Obviously, what else can we expect to read in Sunday's non-league paper?
Yeah, well, I went down to Chipstead against Chertsey Town on Tuesday night, which was unfortunately postponed about 45 minutes before kickoff, just as I arrived. I think they saw me coming when they decided to call that one off. But nonetheless, I spoke to Kevin McLaren, who is the Chertsey manager, obviously, of course, following on from Dave Anderson, who I think won something last season. I can't quite remember what that was. But he's very much settled in very well there. They're up in the playoffs in the East Lynn South Central Division. and going very well. So I was just talking to him about life there and in his new job. I know Matt Bacock has spoken to Anthony Johnson at Chester, who had a great win over King's Lynn in midweek. You know, they're sort of trying to build things now. I think that win for them on Tuesday was very much sort of a sign that they can compete at the top of that division, even though they've been up there all season. But in his words, Anthony Johnson, he said it felt like a big moment for their time at the club. They probably hadn't really had one of those late big wins against a promotion rival like that so far. So he's written a really interesting piece, Matt. We've got a column in there from Andy Smart, who's once again been travelling around the country and seeing what's going on, and plenty more on Sunday as well.
Well, we look forward to reading all about it, David, and thank you once again for your time.
Brilliant, cheers.
So that's it for this week. Thank you to Dave Anderson.
Thank you.
Thank you to Rob Ursel.
Thank you very much.
Well, good luck. Good luck at the weekend against Ware and for the rest of the season. They just need to get a couple of results under your belt, and yeah. I'm sure it'll all be good.
I said to him, if he's in the job for a year, I'll do him on the gaffer tips, but he has to be in it a year. I'm not having any of these learner managers getting on there.
Is that a threat? Or is that...
I just want one win. That'll be it. I'll quit management after one win. I'll be happy with that.
But if anybody heard you in that first half hour, then it certainly sounds like it'll be good football to watch.
Medium to long term, hopefully.
Don't forget, better say a big thank you to all of our guests as well. Sure. and for everybody that listens. You can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non League Show. Dave Anderson's at Dave Anderson 78. Caroline Barker's at Caroline Barker. Myself, I'm at Tim Fuel. Rob, are you on Twitter?
I haven't tweeted in about 3 years.
That's probably a good thing for a manager nowadays. you can, of course, find this show and the Non-League Gaffer Tapes every week on Audio Boom, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, via smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. Thank you and goodbye.
Jibber Jabber Production. JIBBA. Double B A.